We negotiated a ceasefire late last year, that saved thousands of people from starvation and freezing because they'd left their homes and they'd gone up into the mountains and the winter was coming. And we did it because we were not just the United States. It was we and our NATO allies, and Russia supported us. And we said, look, here's the deal. And NATO said, we'll use force if you don't do this. And so they withdrew some of their security forces, and the thing calmed down, and we got some folks back in their house. We thought we were homes, and we thought we were on the way to getting this solved. Then the tensions flared again recently. Another 30,000 refugees, people being driven from their homes and villages. So we had this peace conference in Rambouillet in France just a few days ago in March that had the potential to end the fighting for good. But we had to get both sides to sign it. And like any fight, you know, nobody's totally pure and everybody's got their own axe to grind. But the Kosovar Albanians signed the agreement last week. They signed the agreement last week. Even though it doesn't give them everything they want. They wanted a referendum on their own independence as opposed to autonomy because, I think largely because, even though they are afraid they may be too small and economically weak to be an independent country, they're afraid that the Serbs will never honor their autonomy. But they didn't get that. Even though their people are still being savaged in violation of the agreement that Mr. Milosevic made, they still said a just peace is better than a long and unwinnable war. Milosevic, on the other hand, President Milosevic, refused even to discuss key elements of the agreement. The Kosovars said yes to peace. Serbia put 40,000 troops and 300 tanks in and around Kosovo. If you've been watching on the television, you know they've now started rolling from village to village, predominantly in north-central Kosovo, shelling civilians, torching their homes so they can't come back. In a number of villages, Serbian police have dragged the male members of Kosovar families from their homes, lined up fathers with sons, and shot them in cold blood. This is not a traditional war. It is a conflict between artillery and heavy weapons on the one hand against essentially a guerrilla war for independence. And when the guerrillas disappear, the Kosovar guerrillas, what the Serbian police and military do is come in and just take it out on defenseless people whose representatives have already agreed to a peace. And let me say this, if we don't do something, they got 40,000 troops there, and a bigger offensive could start any moment. This is not the first time, let me remind you, this is not the first time we faced this kind of choice. When President Milosevic started the war in Bosnia 7 years ago, the world did not act quickly enough to stop him. Let's don't forget what happened. Innocent people were herded into concentration camps. Children were gunned down by snipers on their way to school. Soccer fields and parks were turned into cemeteries. 250,000 people in a country with only 6 million population were killed. And 2 million refugees were created. Not because of anything they had done, but because of who they were, and because of the thirst of Mr. Milosevic and his allies to dominate, indeed to crush people who were of different ethnic and religious affiliations. Now, this was a genocide in the heart of Europe. It did not happen in 1945. It was going on in 1995. Now, at the time, a lot of people said, well, there's nothing you can do about it, Mr. President. That's the way those people are. They've been fighting for hundreds of years. So I heard all that, and I actually started reading up on the history of that area. And I found out that, in fact, they had been fighting on and off for hundreds of years, but there was more off than on. And it was an insult to them to say that somehow they were intrinsically made to murder one another. That was the excuse used by countries and leaders for too long. Well, they're just that way. Jerry, now that's what they said about us, about the Irish. In Northern Ireland, oh, they've been arguing over things for 600 years. Yeah, they have. But they're not arguing all the time. You just think about that. Every one of you ever raised a child that misbehaved, think about if you just said, well, that's they're just that way. Right? They're just that way. Well, if every parent said that, the jails would be five times as big as they are. They're too big. Because some people think they're just that way. That's not true. I just don't believe that. So you got to decide what you believe. I don't believe that. And I know what happened in Bosnia. The United States and our allies, along with courageous people in Bosnia and in Croatia who refused to be subdued and fought back, found the unity and the will to stand up against the aggression. And we helped to end the war. And later, to make sure the peace would last, we agreed to send troops in with our allies, including the Russians, Ukrainians, others. We got people from all over the Europe and the United States and Canada in Bosnia. And everybody said, oh, it was going to be just like Vietnam. It was going to be a bloody quagmire, even though there was a peace agreement. And now we've withdrawn 70% of our troops. And there are still difficulties, but we preserve the peace and the slaughter hasn't come back. And I think it was a good investment. And I hope the American people are proud of what they did to end the war in Bosnia. They should be. So, what do we learn from Bosnia? We learned that if you don't stand up to brutality and the killing of innocent people, you invite the people to do it, who do it, to do more of it. We learn that firmness can save lives and stop armies. Now, we have a chance to take the lessons we learned in Bosnia and put them to work in Kosovo before it's too late. But make no mistake about it. This is a country that already has 250,000 refugees. This is a country that's had 30,000 refugees since they stopped the peace talks just a few weeks ago. 1 in 8 of the people who live in this little country have already been run out of their homes. Now, I think if the American people don't know anything about me, else they know that I don't like to use military force, and I do everything I can to avoid it. But if we have to do it, then that's part of the job, and I will do it. I believe Mr. Holbrook is on his way back, because I can tell you, as of last night, as of this morning, as of an hour ago, we got nowhere. He is still denying his responsibility for the crisis, defying the international community, and destroying the lives of more people. Not just the United States, but all our NATO allies have warned him that he will have to honor the commitments he has made. One more time, all this stuff he's doing is in violation of commitments he made to withdraw his forces. And we said if he didn't do it, we would have to take action. NATO is now united and prepared to carry out its warning. If President Milosevic is not willing to make peace, we are willing to limit his ability to make war on the Kosovars. Now, What we are trying to do is to limit his ability to win a military victory and engage in ethnic cleansing and slaughter innocent people. And to do everything we can to induce him to take this peace agreement, which is the only way in the wide world over the long run he's going to be able to keep Kosovo as an independent part of his country, or an autonomous part of his country. Now, I want to level with you. You've been very good. You've listened to me very closely. You've let me make my argument to you about why this is a humanitarian issue and why it is an issue that is in the personal interest of the United States. Now let me tell you that this is like any other military action. There are risks in it if we have to take this action. There are risks every time our young people get up and fly jet airplanes at very high speeds. Most of us could not begin to do that. Most of us don't even have the reflexes or the eyesight or the hearing, never mind the skills to do it. We lose a substantial number of our men and women in uniform every single year in training operations. It is inherently dangerous work. Plus, the Serbs have an air defense system, and it has a considerable capacity. There are risks to our pilots, and there are risks to people on the ground who themselves are innocent bystanders. But the dangers of acting must be weighed against the dangers of inaction. If we don't do anything after all the to and fro that's been said here, it will be interpreted by Mr. Milosevic as a license to continue to kill. There will be more massacres, more refugees, more victims, more people crying out for revenge. And they'll be spreading out to these nearby countries where they have their own ethnic tensions. So instead of just this problem in Kosovo, you'll have the same sort of instability and tensions and the financial burden of refugees in the places around it. The firmness of our allies and ourselves now, I believe, is the only hope the people of Kosovo have to be able to live in their own country without having fear for their own lives. We asked them to accept peace on terms that were less than perfect, and they said yes. We said if they would do it, we would stick by them. Not we, the United States. We, 19 countries in NATO. We cannot run away from that commitment now. And we ought to consider what would happen if we and our allies were to stand aside and let innocent people be massacred at NATO's doorstep. That would discredit NATO because we didn't keep our word. But that's not important except insofar as what it means to you. You got to decide, my fellow Americans, if you agree with me, that in the 21st century that America is the world superpower ought to be standing up against ethnic cleansing if we have the means to do it and we have allies who will help us do it in their neighborhood. And you have to decide whether you agree with me that we have a clear interest after what we saw in World War I, World War II, and the Cold War, and all the people who died, in a Europe that is united, not divided, democratic, not dictatorial, and secure and at peace, not racked by ethnic cleansing. And if you believe that's good for us economically and politically, over and above the humanitarian issue, I do. I believe the case is clear. Especially when you remember, let me say one more time, if you go home and look at a map tonight, you ought to get down and look at it. This is a conflict with no natural boundaries. If it continues, it could spread to neighboring Albania, just to the south. Most of the Kosovars are Albanians. What if they flood Albania with refugees? Albania has a Greek minority. What are they going to do? Are we going to recreate this all over again? Then it could put massive numbers of refugees in Macedonia, where you have both a Slavic majority and a Muslim minority, a country now with a president and a prime minister that have worked with us and taken our NATO troops in and worked with us, putting enormous pressure on them. It could, believe me, it could draw in even Greece and Turkey. So apart from the humanitarian issue and apart from our interest in Kosovo, this thing has no natural boundaries. The whole Balkans area have all these people of different ethnic and religious groups. And if we just say, well, that's just the way they are, then that's the way they'll be. And there's a good chance when this young woman is an adult voting citizen of this country that she'll have to be worried still about whether the politicians are going to deal with innocent people getting killed in that part of the world. I would like to lift that burden from their generation because I think it is morally right and in the vital interest of the United States. And I hope you will support me. I will say again, this is not a slam dunk. This is a difficult issue. This is a difficult decision. I believe that the position I have taken is the best of a lot of bad alternatives. But you didn't just hire me to make the easy decisions. And so I just will say to you, I ask you to talk to your friends and neighbors about this. I ask you literally to go get down an atlas and look at the map. Pay a little closer attention to the news reports. Think about the arguments that I've made. Think about whether you really agree with me. And say a prayer for the young men and women in uniform who are going to be there to do what I, as their commander-in-chief, order them to do.